Welcome to Living the Gospel of Life. We bring you the latest news and information on life issues to help build up the culture of life. Thank you for listening. I'm Brian Gibson, CEO of Pro-Life Action Ministry.
And I'm Angela Erickson, a board member for Pro-Life Action Ministries.
Yeah, what a beautiful couple weeks it's been out there, even with all the rain.
A little hot, too, but...
Yeah, well...
But the lake is
on
for.
And off. Yeah. On and off. Yeah, that's yep. That's what the water's for, is right? Yes. That's why we live in a state with lots of water.
Yes.
Not the mosquitoes, but the cooling off effect. So
I don't want to think about those.
Well, they are part of it. They are part of it. Well, hey, this past week, I participated in this student group for high school students called the Summer Senate. And I was invited by the person that runs it. His name is Dave Racer, for those who might be familiar with him. And I was invited to give testimony to the students who were set up as the senators in a hearing setting on adoption, and just had a wonderful time talking about the good, the laws that should be there. I went through a whole list of the laws that we've had in the state of Minnesota over the years. You know, back in 94, I believe it was, the state of Minnesota did a lot of revisions of its adoption laws because of stuff that was happening in Eastern Europe and places like that. And I ended up testifying before the actual House committee on this in at the state of Minnesota. So it was fun. It was kind of fun to talk about our own adoption experience as well as the professional experiences I've had with adoption. So just a fun thing to do, Angela.
Yeah, that sounds, I miss working with students, so that always sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it's very, very great questions they asked. They were paying attention quite a bit. And I was the last of the day, so I was, they might be tired and ready to get out of there, but they were attentive and they asked a ton of questions, and
they were all very good.
So I was glad to see that. And we got a couple baby save stories. One is a baby we document saved with the ministry. This is at the Mega Planned Parenthood in St. Paul. And the Cyborg counselor who was involved in this is the one that used to relieve me every week when I went to this location on Wednesday mornings. I now go to Whole Woman's instead in Bloomington. But Stacy's still getting out there, and she is very good. We used to have this little thing going on where I may have encountered the person coming in and handed them the literature and said a few words as they went in. And then she would be the one that would talk to them and help them decide not to abort after I left. And so we kind of had this thing going on. Well, this is another one of those where she had the opportunity to engage the young woman and took the information, decided not to abort her little baby. So it was very
good. Praise the Lord.
The other story is at Uptown in Minneapolis, and listeners, we have this very good pro-life organization, Pregnancy Help Resource Center, that's called Alpha, and they have a mobile pregnancy center. And so we've been working alongside with them for quite a while now, encouraging them to come out, them encouraging us by coming out, and they come out to a couple locations each week. One of them is this Uptown location. So a couple weeks ago, the mom came, and she didn't even talk to the pregnancy or to the sidewalk counselors. She saw the mobile unit and saw the signage on the mobile unit, and she went over there to get her ultrasound instead of going into Planned Parenthood. And she too chose life for her baby. So, it's one we won't document because we weren't involved directly in the woman deciding not to abort. This Alpha unit is the people with Alpha at the unit are the reason why, but it's still, that cooperation is still there, and it's just wonderful to see that happen. So.
Well, and I feel like when people understand that the pregnancy centers and our sidewalk counselors, these are the last lines of defense in the pro-life movement for helping women see that they don't actually need an abortion. I love stories of seeing that type of working together and supporting each other, because it is so important. These people working, this is the front line. This is the front line of the pro-life movement.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you right now, we have this extensive sidewalk counseling program We believe the best, if not the very best, among the very best in the United States. And if it weren't for quality pregnancy centers, we would not be able to do as good a job as we do by yeah. any means whatsoever. I mean, this is, I like to call it a symbiotic relationship.
We it need is. Each other,
yep. yes. In order for this to work. And so we get the women away from the abortion facilities and they take the women in, which is why we can get them away. Mm-hmm. And they get the women coming from the abortion facilities because we got them away from them. So it's just this very, very good relationship to have. And in Minnesota in particular, I know it's this way in many places around the country, but even more so here, we have some very great pregnancy centers.
We do.
And easy to rely on them for what is needed. So
yeah, we are very yeah. blessed. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very much so. And we love defending the pregnancy centers ourselves. So we've done that over the years. Well, out there in the news, we've talked about the last couple of weeks about this lawsuit that the Attorney General of California brought against Heartbeat International and the Real Options Medical Clinics, pregnancy centers in California, under this very, I believe, very bad claim of some sort of consumer fraud. And of course, in this, as the trial has been going on, I know the leaders of Heartbeat very well. I know their attorneys, the Thomas More Society folks, very well. These are good friends as well as colleagues. And so I'm getting some, you know, bits and pieces of how testimony is going, who's been put on the stand and so forth like that. And, you know, here's the bottom line. In all the years that abortion, this is all about abortion pill reversal. Make sure that's clear. It was all about abortion pill reversal. The state of California and the pro-abortion leadership, both politically and in the pro-abortion movement in the state of California, hate abortion pill reversal. And so in their loathing of this protocol that saves lives, they have defamed it every which way and made some claims. They've claimed that the abortion pill is safer than Tylenol, which is not true in any means whatsoever. They've claimed that abortion pill reversal is harmful to women, which again is not true in any way, shape, or form. So when the pro-lifers are saying, we've got this, it works, it's safe, no problems, they've decided that's consumer fraud. That's the basis of their case. Well, now, Archbishop of San Francisco, Archbishop Salvatore Corleone, has come out on social media calling upon people to pray for the Thomas More Society attorneys and to pray for Heartbeat International and Real Options, and of course for the women that are served by this, that the lives of their babies will be saved, and that this, as he says, abuse of power by the state of California come to an end. Some very good messaging there coming from the Archbishop of San Francisco.
Yeah, it's always nice to see. He's very good about speaking out and being right on the money. He's just like right on the nose every single time. He calls things exactly what they are. And I appreciate that. We need more good bishops like him that aren't afraid to speak out.
I got to meet him.
Did you? Oh, not to brag or anything.
Not to brag or anything, but I got to meet him.
Oh,
many years
so
ago.
Wonderful.
Well, hey, I've had, because of our work, I've had the opportunity to meet some amazing bishops and archbishops.
I believe it.
Priests yeah. and nuns and all sorts of great individuals yeah. in this movement. So it's, you know, I got to meet them. But you know, it isn't just that he speaks out, he acts.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's important. It's just like our archbishop here. He acts as well. He comes out and helps lead prayer on Good Friday. He just doesn't say abortion is wrong. He puts his feet behind it, right? Mm-hmm. And so the same thing with Archbishop Corleone. You know, he did this very thing that so few bishops are willing to do when dealing with a very radical pro-abortion Catholic
yes.
politician. He has denied communion in his archdiocese to Nancy Pelosi. And he yep. did it well because he didn't just do it. He challenged her privately several times. Now, she made it public.
Yes.
But he went to her one-on-one, privately, private communications, admonishing her to change, to start behaving like a Catholic. And she refused and made it public and used it as a wedge and all these other things. He did all that, was all done before he ever made anything public himself.
Yeah.
And so
he's a good father. He's a good spiritual father. Right. You know, he wants to lead his children.
Then he started a prayer campaign for her.
Mm-hmm.
That's because the whole idea of this denial of communion, which is what we call excommunication, right?
Yeah.
That's what excommunication is, where we cannot go to Holy Communion. Well, the purpose of it isn't to punish somebody. It's meant to call them to Christ.
It's medicine. Collection. Yeah, it's exactly. Medicine. It's medicinal.
And that's how he did it so well. Well, on July 4th, or I should say July 5th, the 1 year of moratorium of Planned Parenthood receiving Medicaid funding came to an end. And Congress has not acted to continue this defunding of Planned Parenthood. So as of July 5th, Planned Parenthood all across the United States, it returns to being eligible to receive Medicaid funding where they're allowed to receive it. This is an $800 million section of their funding as of the year of 2024, the year before they got cut off.
Could you imagine that kind of money being injected into our pregnancy centers?
Yes, I could, but it could be harmful too.
I agree. So I agree with you. Like
would that be bad?
It's a double-edged sword, right? Yeah. I mean, it's kind of the same thing with the Positive Alternatives Grant when that was taken here in the state of Minnesota, when that was taken away from pregnancy centers. I mean, it was great for a lot of centers until you suddenly realize that they're relying on it to sustain positions in their organization. And so, like, I've talked to so many pregnancy center directors who had to completely revise how they went about fundraising and make that a priority because this funding was lost. And honestly, I think they're so much stronger for it. But it was very hard. It was such a difficult time.
A little medicine there. But, back when this Positive Alternatives Grant was first put forward in the state, we were encouraged to do a grant, to accept a grant, to apply, because we were doing more pregnancy counseling related stuff internally at that time. And I said, no way. I didn't want to have
same.
That.
When we were at, when I was at Cornerstone, when I was running Cornerstone, that was, we had the same mindset. It's like, I don't want to at all rely on this funding. One, because I don't want there to ever at any point be strings that are suddenly attached. You know, it's like, if you're receiving this kind of funding, then you have to behave in this way. And I just didn't want to do any of that. So,
well, and there were strings attached to start with.
Yes. Yeah.
So we just didn't want to, we didn't want to have our ability to act, very overtly as Christians hindered in anything that we're doing. And, you know, it would have been one little program or something like that. I just didn't want that. And, so now, as far as the defunding of Planned Parenthood, we reported the last couple of weeks that the HHS has cut off funding on a different grant program to Planned Parenthood. They've got the Title X money is also being, you know, cut. Now, these are much smaller programs funding wise, but, you know, it's not like it's only the Medicaid funding that is returned, which is the big dollar amount that they get from federal dollars. Congress could still act right now. They could still act and they could cut off funding for the rest of the fiscal year till July 24th, 2027. The problem is we're in an election year, and even those that we count on as voting well don't necessarily do so because they're concerned about their reelections or something like that. So that plays into it. But, you know, on the other side of this equation is us, the voters. And there's a story that Dave Andrusko works for National Right to Life out in Washington, D.C., but he's a Minnesota native. And my coworker here, Deborah Brown, actually worked for him as an assistant editor for National Right to Life News before she came back to Minnesota and started working for Pro-Life Action Ministries. So I've gotten to know Dave over the years, and he's a good voice in the pro-life movement. And he put out an article talking about pro-life voting. And he's showing that most of these elections, a lot of elections where the victor wins by such a small margin, less than 200 votes often. In fact, in 2024 in Minnesota, we gained enough seats in the House of Representatives in our state house to make it even so that the pro-abortion leadership would be forced to stop putting forward pro-abortion, horrible pro-abortion stuff, one thing after another, like they started doing in 2023. And so one race, it was a difference of 160 votes that made this tie possible. Well, here's the rub of the whole thing. 30% of pro-life people do not vote. And this works with federal elections, congressional seats, U.S. Senate seats. Remember back when Norm Coleman lost his election seat? It was by, I think it was around 200 or 200 some votes or less. Yeah. Again, if even half of the 30% that don't vote were to vote, we'd start seeing more victories in these very narrow elections.
Well, and we'd have better candidates too. We'd have better candidates too. I think that's the thing that I keep coming back to. You know, I was talking with a neighbor of mine who was in a parade for a Republican candidate last week. And I said, well, did you know that she's pro-abortion? Well, no, she had no idea. Do you think she would have been walking in this ladies' parade if she knew that this Republican candidate was pro-abortion? No, she wouldn't have. But that's the thing is, like, even we would have better candidates and there would be less obfuscating, I would like to think, because you'd have more pro-life voters. They would actually be trying to get the pro-life vote instead of trying to win over the mushy middle necessarily, or the left thinking that, well, if I'm buddy buddies with them on this abortion issue, maybe they'll still vote for me. And that's not how this works. The left votes as a block. I mean, they don't ever come to the other side. It doesn't work that way.
And they go harder and harder in that direction all the time.
All the time. I'm so frustrated. I'll be honest, Brian. I'm so frustrated.
But that's part of the reason why. That's part of the reason why there's such a large block of pro-lifers who don't vote, is because we get frustrated. We see what's happening.
We're disaffected.
We hear the news. You know, the news media pounds on us. They pound on our politicians. You know, and so forth. Of course, the pro-abortion movement, the pro-abortion politicians, and these campaign ads and all that stuff. It's just, you know, it's overwhelmingly horrible in so many ways. But here's the thing we got to start thinking and doing, is not looking at what's being said by all these people, including some of our own folks, because we got a few out there, not to name one in particular, who says things that aren't so good a lot of the time. We have to look at what they're doing. We have to see how they're voting. We got to see what they're putting forward, and base it on what they're doing as opposed to how they talk or what's being said about them. And so that requires a little work, but it isn't that hard to do, because pro-life organizations put out information all the time to help us understand who stands where. And to not vote at all, I mean, even if you mistakenly vote incorrectly, it's better that you at least try to vote, because you're looking to do what's right. And so I think it's very important we do that. And we have our campaigning going on right now for the I'm sorry, my mind is blanking on the term. August in July is our primary. There we go. And so the primary voting is going on right now. You know. And so
yes, primaries. I was gonna say, I think it started June 26th.
Right. So early voting is already taking place. And if the reason we have this percentage of pro-lifers who aren't voting is because they can't get to the polls, I'll tell you what, you can vote without having to go to the polls when you're doing early voting. You can get the write-in vote. You can get all that stuff and get it taken care of even before the primary date. Primary is a great time to start it up. And then again, the November election. We can't just do one or the other. We should be doing them all. And always being there, always looking for the candidates who are doing what's right for the unborn and for women and for society, always. So
the family has to come first. Yeah,
absolutely. So Well, in the state of Delaware, they were pushing forward a pro-abortion constitutional amendment, like so many others have been around the United States since the Dobbs decision. But this one looks like it is not going to happen this fall because it did not make it through a final vote before the end of their legislative session, which ended on June 30th. Very good. Still a lot of work to keep it from happening in the future.
Yeah.
And then in New Hampshire, the governor decided to veto a bill that was passed that would have protected medical employees from committing or participating in abortions when they had conscience objections.
That is so evil. So
I know.
Evil.
She wanted to say it was unnecessary. It's unnecessary to protect people's consciences. That's what she was saying. Because abortion is so necessary in the minds of those who purport this terrible stuff.
Horrible.
And then we got a report that's showing that, and this is coming out of the Guttmacher Institute, which is a pro-abortion organization, but statistics they tend to be fairly close to being accurate on. They're showing that New Mexico has the highest abortion rate of any state in the U.S. in the year 2025.
Oof.
We're talking 39.5 abortions per 1,000 women.
Wow.
Which is far higher than California, New York, New Jersey,
even here.
Maryland, Illinois. Oh,
it used to be like, yeah, I mean, it's over 10, it's probably close to 10 more a day, you know, than we have.
Yeah.
Right?
So,
per hour?
Now, here's why.
Per day. Yeah.
There's a reason why. Now, first of all, New Mexico has set themselves up, just like we have in Minnesota and some of these other states, to invite women to come have abortions in their state. Okay. And that's exactly why their numbers are so high and why their rate is so ridiculously high, horribly high, is because of the states that surround New Mexico that have outlawed abortion almost entirely, especially Texas, one of the largest populations in the United States. So there's been this big, hard move to get Texan women to go to New Mexico to have their abortion. So the rate isn't based upon New Mexico women per 1,000.
Right.
It's based on really that they've got a lot of women coming from other states.
Right.
To have their abortion. So in Oregon, the pro-life organization Oregon Right to Life had just won an appeal to allow them to be exempt from paying for abortion in insurance programs. Oregon passed this law. It allowed for an exemption. It was requiring that all insurances pay for abortions with the exemption for religious organizations. Oregon Right to Life is not a religious organization.
Right.
And so it took an appellate court judge to rule that Oregon is exempt as well, but they did not find the whole law unconstitutional, so it only exempts religious organizations and Oregon Right to Life.
Weird.
So, I know. New law in Iowa began on July 1. I didn't even know it had passed and become law. I love this. Iowa is now requiring in-person physician appointments before abortion drugs can be prescribed or dispensed.
Good. I mean, all of it's evil, but it's like this, we've talked about it so much. People abusing, getting these pills and slipping them into women's drinks, or women not knowing exactly how far along they are. And it's just so dangerous for them.
Correct. Now, the abortionists are required under this law to screen for coercion or abuse.
Yeah, how do you do that
written,
online?
Informed consent. And it virtually ends the idea of telehealth-only abortions in the state of Iowa. Now, I want you to all think back to last week that we're listening. Last week, we reported that the Planned Parenthood of North Central States, which is located, headquartered in St. Paul, Minnesota, but also covers the state of Iowa, they decided to close their other abortion facility and consolidate everything into one location in Des Moines, Iowa. So they, Planned Parenthood only has one in-person location available for abortions in the state of Iowa. And now that's the only place the abortion drugs can be dispensed.
Wow. Yeah, that's huge.
Yeah. So that is a big deal in Iowa. We're very glad to hear that. Malta, the little Maltese country, this amazing little island nation in the Mediterranean that remains so stalwartly pro-life, their constitutional court, which is their highest court, has upheld their country's pro-life protections in a ruling against, get this, an American tourist who claimed that her fundamental rights were violated in 2022 when she was denied an abortion.
Oh, my goodness. Oh.
An American tourist.
It is comical.
That is the ugly American.
Yes. I know. My first thought was like, is this where we get the reputation for being entitled? I mean, it's crazy.
Yes, it is exactly where we get our reputation. In fact, it's a well-deserved reputation because all you got to do is look around the United States and see all the people who think they're so entitled.
Yep.
Yes. In Ireland, the abortion rate continues to, or the number of abortions that continue to rise. Ireland legalized abortion in 2018, very unfortunately.
Yeah, that was
that
so
law
sad.
Took effect in 2019. They've got a total of more than almost 47,000 abortions committed since then in the small nation. But despite that, only 1 in 10 doctors are willing to commit chemical abortions in Ireland. Mm. And there seems to be some good movement now coming from the pro-life side of things in Ireland to try and tamp this down more and more. So we have doctors now who are claiming that Planned Parenthood is using alternative codes when billing insurance companies for their cross-sex treatments in Pennsylvania, which is fraud. So
well,
some of the doctors
talked about that. That's nothing new for Planned Parenthood.
Yeah, I know. And so they do this, what they call gender-affirming care for minors without parental knowledge or consent. They're dispensing these drugs, these hormone drugs, to these minors. And then in order to get it paid for, because mom and dad don't even know about it, so mom and dad aren't paying the bill, they go to the insurance provider. And since the insurance providers don't give money, don't pay for these drugs when they are being specified properly, they're billing for something different. They're calling it endocrine disorder as opposed to this gender identity disorder.
Pretty clever.
In order to get paid. Yeah. Straight up violations. Unbelievable. In Russia. Now Russia legalized abortion in 1920. When it was still part of the Soviet Union. In fact, it was the heart of the Soviet Union. And over 70 years of the Soviet Union's existence, more than 200 million abortions took place in Russia. Abortions continued at a high rate after the fall of the Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. And now, countless women who are suffering after having abortions are starting to go to post-abortion retreats in large numbers, getting the healing and help that they need. Rachel's Vineyard is just growing left and right in Russia right now.
Praise the Lord.
Along with that, there is a post-abortion healing program in South Carolina in North Carolina, in the Winston-Salem area. And they have just put together a garden of remembrance for preborn children. I love that concept where you remember the babies as you pray for them, as well as for the moms. And the dads that have been involved in abortion. And of course, for those who have been aborting, as the healthcare people actually committing the abortions, that they come to Christ and turn from all that evil. These are all things we need to keep praying for. And of course, we do need to vote pro-life. Thank you, and God bless you.